Encore break right now, night three, coming to you live from Cancun, Mexico, and you're listening to
The Pod That Jane Likes.
This is a DMB Society podcast.
I got a sister named Jane.
And this is The Pod That Jane Likes. And now, here are your hosts, Jeanette, Trisha, Matt, and Sean.
Welcome into episode 60 of The Pod That Jane Likes, a roundtable discussion of all things happening in the world of Dave Matthews Band. I'm your host, Jeanette, and as always, I'm joined by my friends and co-hosts, Trisha, Matt, and Sean. We have a lot to chat about this week. We will be diving into the latest Rock and Roll Hall of Fame news. If you haven't already heard, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame released their nominations, and guess who's back on the ballot? Our very own Dave Matthews Band. Plenty of buzz has been created as a result of the announcement, and in some ways, we've seen this movie before. Will this time around be different than the last? Will DMB finally snag that well-deserved spot? Stay tuned to hear our thoughts. But the biggest story of the week took place south of the border during Dave and Tim's annual trip to Cancun, Mexico. Mexico 2024 has a little bit of everything this year, and we've got plenty of thoughts to share on the weekend. There were some old favorites with new friends, and a fresh batch of songs receiving the Dave and Tim treatment for the first time. All that, including a night three rainstorm that couldn't even wash out a mini Dave and Friends reunion. A quick reminder that if you're enjoying The Pod That Jane Likes, don't forget to show us some love by rating and reviewing, as well as subscribing on your favorite podcast platforms. And if you're on social media, give us a like or follow and join our ever-growing community. Simply search for The Pod That Jane Likes on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. So guys, are you ready for episode 60? It's going to be a good one. Let's jump right into it and discuss the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in the segment we like to call The Opener. Nominations for the class of 2024 were released, and they consist of, and I want to hear your thoughts on this, right? I'm gonna list them out, and I want to hear some thoughts. I want to hear some reactions, okay?
Okay.
Do you need a drum roll? Okay. You need a drum roll? I'm ready.
All right, number one. The Prince of Darkness himself, Ozzy Osbourne, famously known for being the lead vocalist of heavy metal band Black Sabbath. Just deserved, maybe.
I'm sorry.
Hi. Okay.
Just moving along. It's not Dave. I thought we were talking about Dave.
Peter Frampton, an English-American guitarist and classic singer-songwriter. The band Foreigner, a 70s, 80s rock band, probably known best for the anthematic ballad, I Want to Know What Love Is. I was just kind of waiting for Matt to say it, but
yeah.
I want to feel what love is.
Cher, I mean, she doesn't need an introduction. She's a legend. She's Cher.
How is Cher not in
the That one is like, Cher, really? She's not there already? Okay. Grammy Award winner Lenny Kravitz.
Ooh.
He's easy on the eyes. Pop legend Mariah Carey. Hit after hit and probably one of the best singers of our lifetime. Kool & the Gang. R&B soul funk band formed in Jersey City, New Jersey. So many hits, including Celebrate, Jungle Boogie, Get Down On It, Ladies Night, just to name a few.
Mm. How you gonna do it if you really don't want to dance? Sorry.
Not standing on the wall.
We should have set this up so like you say the thing and then like you call one of us to
you guys guess.
No, we sing whatever song it is that they put out.
Next year. Moving on, Oasis. Ooh. I mean, if you were around in the 90s and you don't know who Oasis is, did you even live?
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
I mean, do not know Wonderwall. The late, great Sinead O'Connor. Sinead was an Irish singer-songwriter and activist who just recently passed in 2023. She is most famous for her cover of Prince's masterpiece, Nothing Compares to You, which she sang beautifully. Sade, Sade is one of the most successful British female artists in history and really influenced contemporary music in the 80s and 90s. Jane's Addiction, not the same Jane this podcast is named after. But Jane's Addiction is an American rock band that's led by vocalist Perry Farrell and guitarist Dave Navarro, big names in the 90s and rock bands in the 90s. Mary J. Blige, the queen of hip hop and the queen of R&B.
Yes, please.
Mary has won 9 Grammys, and I got to tell you, I played her debut album, What's a 411, until I ruined it.
Absolutely.
Another favorite, Tribe Called Quest.
Ooh, good one.
An American hip-hop group formed in Queens. And speaking of hip-hop, Eric B. and Rakim, a hip-hop duo formed on Long Island in 1986. And last but not least, our very own Dave Matthews Band.
He wakes up in the morning.
This is DMV's second time being nominated in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Last time was in 2020, where they famously won the fan vote. Not even did they just win the fan vote, but they received the most votes ever in fan vote history. Just got to put that out there. But alas, they did not get inducted in that year's class. Now, this really riled up the fan base, as you can imagine. I don't know about you guys, but I remember being devastated and wondering what was the point of the fan vote to begin with. Do you guys remember what you were feeling when this happened? Can I get some feelings?
I'm still in my feelings about it, honestly.
I hear you.
You know, this is complicated because in some ways in 2020, when we heard that our band was nominated, we were so like honored and happy and voted like crazy, obviously, to get the most votes that any band has ever gotten. And when we didn't get in, it was devastating. So much so that I feel like the only way to cope with that was to say F the Rock Hall. So now you're coming back in 2024 saying, hey, you should care about the Rock Hall. And I'm like, well, no, I had to like, in order for me to get over that, I had to forget you. But this is me. I'm just saying this, these feelings, because I think a lot of listeners feel the same. But I would like to change my attitude, because I do think it's a big thing. And if they do get in, I want to feel very proud, like I was part of it. And, you know, I got over myself, basically. That's what I'd like to do. But that's my complicated feelings on this.
Those feelings are absolutely fair. I have the same feelings. So I completely get it. When this was announced, I was anxious, stressed out, hyperventilating. Not really sure how I felt about it. So I think a lot of people had that kind of reaction. Like, am I going to spend my time voting again for something that I don't know matters?
Yeah, I mean, you guys know, we've talked about this already, how I feel about it. To me, why should I care about this? I mean, I would love to care about it, but why should I care about it? I have a couple of points to make here, which I'll make and be very brief in my point making. Number one is this a popularity contest? Because if it is, then DMB should have been in, right? Based on the fan vote. If this is about stats, then they should be in because they have these insane touring stats. They have this number one album streak that just ended with Walk Around the Moon. But only because all the metrics have changed because of streaming services and stuff like that. So if it's not a popularity contest and it's not statistics, then what is it? And why should I care about it? You know, like if you're talking about other Hall of Fames, like sports Hall of Fames, things like that, you know, there's certain criteria that you need to get in. Like you're not going to be considered unless you get to this upper echelon of whatever it is. And these things that clearly are there just don't matter. So what is it? And like, then it just becomes super arbitrary. And then why should I care? I liken this whole thing to the Grammys, where I was just totally put off after Leroy Moore died and he was not mentioned in the In Memoriam segment. And the man won a freaking Grammy. Like, shouldn't there be some sort of like thing where like somebody's checking the list of people who have passed away in the past year? And if any of them received a Grammy award, that they should be acknowledged
automatically, like, on the list. Absolutely.
Automatically on the list. Right. Like, it's just it's silly. And I honestly like do not care at all. If they get in, will I be excited? Sure. And I'll be extra excited for that concert and potential collaborations and the will Boyd show up or won't Boyd show up
right
conversations that we're all going to have. But until then, like, I just don't care.
Also, that's all I got. Fair take. Sean, you have any takes?
Not really. No.
Okay.
No, I mean, to your question, Jeanette, you were asking how we felt if you turn back the clock to when DMB won the fan vote and then the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame basically said, like, ha ha ha, the joke's on you, like this meant nothing.
Right.
I think, like, the word that comes to mind when I think back to that was conned, right? Like, mm-hmm. maybe
bamboozled.
Yeah, it was like maybe other people knew that the fan vote didn't matter, and for whatever reason, me and the rest of the DMB fan base weren't aware of that. But I didn't know it at the time, so I was really excited. And yeah, and of course, everyone knows the way that story went, that the fan vote means nothing. I think it adds up to one vote out of hundreds and hundreds that they collect. So I think because of that, it's hard for me to get excited over the nomination. I think the other side of that coin is I also don't know what to think about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Like, I think as time has gone on and more and more people have gone in, or more and more people have been snubbed, it's very hard for me to get a grasp on what the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is. And that's kind of what Matt's points, where I believe it's really difficult to understand what the criteria is. I could, you know, Absolutely. Have a podcast just on arguing about who should be in and not in the Baseball Hall of Fame, for example, but it's based on criteria.
Yeah.
This right. just isn't.
This is subjective.
So you add all these things up, and I think where I sit is still have a sour taste in my mouth from last go around, even though it was a number of years ago. And if DMB ends up getting in, do I think that they deserve it? Of course they deserve it. The numbers don't lie. Whether it's album sales, whether it's ticket sales, whether it's the fan vote. I mean, all of this adds up to, yes, of course they should be in. And will I be excited if and when that happens? Of course I will be. But until then,
Well, I think the conning comes into play because the precedence was set that every nominee that won the fan vote got in before and then until this time. So that's why it felt like a big, you know, slap in the face.
But especially to have the biggest fan vote ever, to have the most votes. Yeah. Like, it was a slap in the face. You're right.
I don't know, y'all. We're pretty
jaded over here.
We're pretty jaded, but I do feel like I wish I knew if Dave cared. If Dave was like, I care, and it's like an award he really wants to get, like, I feel like, oh, I want to care too, and I want to support him. But if he's like also not caring, I'm just like, whatever. But I do want our band to get in with like the most fan votes. So I do feel like from this point forward, I'm going to vote every day. To inspire the same. And that's my commitment.
And you all should too. Make sure you're voting every day.
Right.
Now, and Matt touched on this a little bit, there's plenty of reasons why the Dave Matthews Band should be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I think it's safe to say we all think they're deserving of it. But can we just go around the room and give one reason why you think Dave Matthews Band deserves to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Who wants to go first?
Well, I'll go first. I don't know that I have like a concrete number for this, but just what the band has accomplished in 30 plus years of touring. I mean, the album numbers, they're real numbers that you can add up and you can stack up against other people. The amount of times that they debuted an album at number one, like, these are concrete things. Maybe somebody else will pick that. But for me, the fact that this band has had so many lives, they've gone through different band members. Mm-hmm. They've gone through personnel on stage, behind the scenes. They've had a million, and every band that has existed for this long has a million things thrown at them. But to still have the following that they have and to still be able to put on tours with 30, 40 shows per year, more when you're including fall tours, European tours, you know, all these little one-off things that they do. Yeah, I think it's the fact that they've maintained this following for so long. It's really impressive to me.
Sure. Yeah, and to your point, they were the highest grossing touring act of the whole decade of the 2000s. Between 2000 and 2010, they made $529 million in ticket sales. So for someone to be the highest grossing touring act of a whole entire decade and don't get recognized for something, there's no award for that. So why isn't that something that, why isn't that a statistic that is a criteria for this sort of thing, you know? no one knows.
Well, I'll go next in terms of why I think that they deserve to get in. It sort of touches on that, but I think it's just the place that DMB takes up within the whole world of live music, especially. You look at other bands that may tour every year, even like a band like Phish now, who is somewhat comparable, or like a band like Pearl Jam. I think those are the two other bands that you can lump DMB in with a bit because of their mainstream success, but also their cult followings. DMB is doing a zillion more shows than either of those other bands. You know, Phish like picks and chooses what they do. Pearl Jam is like, you know,
every three or four years.
Exactly. And DMB is there every year. And not just there, they're not playing to these half houses. I mean, in some places they are, but the regular tour stops that they make are, you know, close to sellouts, if not sellouts. I mean, we all know how hard a ticket it is to get inside in Saratoga, you know,
Madison
the Gorge,
Garden,
MSG, yeah. Like all these places, they're regularly selling out. They're regularly doing exceptionally well. And they're just such a consistent, you know, across the board, consistent whenever they tour, wherever they tour. I've kind of, you know, Guilford is probably the closest thing that I've ever gotten to being like, oh my gosh, this band that I love is going to play this venue. You know, I've thought like, oh, they're going to, you know, sort of dwindle down and start to play like, you know, the two thirds of the size of the big amphitheater, you know, kind of places, the secondary amphitheaters, if you will, over the summer. And that just hasn't happened. They've stuck with these big venues and they still sell a ton of tickets and they're always, always there. So I think just for that reason alone, I don't think there's anybody that compares in that regard. You know, you have these other bands who might tour as much, like that are lesser known, like a Widespread Panic or a String Cheese Incident or something like that. But these guys
get
are
the
just
hell out of here. Not even. I mean,
who are these people?
It's interesting, to Matt, to your point, when you look at it that way, it's kind of remarkable to think of how long that they've been touring. And if you look at the big venues that this band plays year in and year out, coast to coast, those are the hardest tickets to get every year, whether it's here on the East Coast, you're talking about Saratoga, MSG, Charlottesville, whenever that gets thrown in the Midwest, Alpine, obviously in the big three, very difficult tickets to get whenever they play there. Deer Creek has a following of people in that venue as well. And then, of course, the Gorge is its own thing on the West Coast. So really, coast to coast, it's remarkable all these years. And every single time that DMB plays those venues, they're tough tickets to get. And we're talking about they're tough tickets to get for 30 years now, almost, you know.
They're
hard tickets to get. And it's not that they're hard tickets to get in small windows. They're hard tickets to get for multiple decades from one side of the country to the other.
Yep. Well, for me, they're the best band in the universe. No one compares. I mean, it's really what you're saying. They're operating at an elite level and no touring band compares. You named bands. It's like, well, that's not even on the same playing field of this band for how long they've been doing it. Okay. It's elite. It is elite touring band. And then this is the only thing I'll add that I think is different. What about the man and human that Dave Matthews is? Mm-hmm. He's a humanitarian that I think
that was one of mine.
Makes a bunch of money and gives a bunch of it away. Mm-hmm. All right. And he's trying to save the planet with every ticket sale. And he's just, so he's a good human.
Mm-hmm. They practice what they preach. And I think that that is a huge criteria. Yeah.
There's no band that compares. So.
Yeah. I mean, these are all great arguments. And I think it's safe to say we think that Dave Matthews Band wholeheartedly deserves to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I think they deserve this honor. Let us know what you guys think. Let us know on our social media pages. I'm sure you guys have a lot to say about this topic just as much as we do. And we'll keep you updated on any news surrounding this. They typically announce the inductees at the end of April. And then the induction ceremony will be in the fall in Cleveland this year. So maybe we'll be in Ohio. Maybe we won't. We'll see. We'll find out at the end of April. I hope we will be. But now, let's trade in the ballot boxes for some beach vibes as we jam all of the excitement that was Dave and Tim 2024. Let's go. Okay, what a weekend. There's so much to talk about. Three nights of Dave and Tim on the beautiful beaches of Cancun, Mexico. We couch toured, and man, were there some real good surprises. I mean, I guess the best place to start is night one, right? Night one brought us classics such as Big Eyed Fish, Best of What's Around, Lie in Our Graves, Bartender. But also in true Mexico form, there were some surprises. Because like what Matt says, what happens in Mexico stays in Mexico. Matt, do you want to tell us one of your highlights for night one?
All right. So my highlight night one is for sure, hands down, 1,000%, Can't Find My Way Home.
I knew you were going to say that.
I love this song to begin with. I think that Dave's voice is perfectly suited for this song. And I thought it was perfection across the board. You are the reason that the wedding is so lonely. Somebody holds the key. Without the feeling, just in your time. Yeah, I'm wasting a night. Can't find my way home. I will say one interesting little tidbit is that Dave was playing a brand new guitar for this song. We at the Pod That Jane Likes reached out to Rockbridge Guitars to ask if this was one of their guitars, and they confirmed that no, this was not a Rockbridge. This is a nylon string guitar, which I believe this is the first time that Dave has ever played a nylon string guitar on stage. And here we are with Can't Find My Way Home on the beach. Perfect. Everything was great. I would love to see this song E1 throughout the summer tour. I think it would be absolutely killer. Can't Find My Way Home is my for sure highlight.
Nice.
Sean, what about you?
Well, interestingly enough, my highlight comes from the same part of night one, if you will. I think I naturally, I don't know if anybody else does this, but because Dave and Tim performances have those Tim solo performances sprinkled in, usually two per night, DMB doesn't, as a band, at least they don't anymore, they don't have intermissions, but and Tim's performances are far from an intermission. But when I look at a set list, it kind of allows me to break the set list up, the first half of the set list, sure, the middle part of the set list. And on this particular night, night one of Mexico, the first half of the set list, I thought it was incredible. I thought it really set the tone for the weekend. You kind of rattled through some of it, Jeanette, Big Eyed Fish, Grace, Best of What's Around. There's Matt's pick, Can't Find My Way Home, Lie in Our Graves. And then of this, the group, it also includes Bartender and Gray Street. Cortez the Killer was my standout in this set that I loved so much. If you were not couch touring or not in Mexico or none of the above, I guess I could be the first to inform you that Dave and Tim brought out Jason Isbell to perform during Cortez the Killer. And I just thought Jason fit the song so well. I did not know what to expect when the song started. DMB's performed Cortez with some really monster guitar players over the years. And I think Cortez is one of those songs, because it's not a DMB song, because it features a guest so many times, as soon as I hear Cortez, I immediately start making comparisons to other versions of Cortez. And that's not really fair to what's happening in the moment. But in any case, I was so blown away, so thoroughly enjoying this particular version. I thought that Jason's style, the way that he plays, really fit the song very well. He sort of adds his own characteristics when the moment calls for it, but then kind of falls back into the dialect of the performance. It's really impressive to take in. I just really enjoyed Cortez. I really enjoyed what Jason Isbell brought to this. And I really enjoyed that first set of music night one.
I agree that Cortez, the killer, I have to admit, was Cortez was a little tired for me over the last couple of years. I was like, all right, take or leave. That really injected some new life, I will say, into that song. He did sound it so good. The guitar playing was definitely unique and different on that. So that was definitely a highlight for me as well. I mean, Night One was a banger of a night. I mean, we got heavy hitters. Like you're all saying, I think one of the cool moments was they played The Weight again and brought out Mavis Staples and Rob Stevenson, which is Dave's vocal coach. Rob gives a lot to the community in terms of his just so generous with his time to fans. And from afar, we weren't there, but from afar, you could hear it over the couch tour. Just the place erupted. I thought that was such a cool moment. I had asked him if he thought it was a cool, like, I hope that he really took that in. And he said that, what are the things in your ears? IEMs?
IEMs, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was all locked in. He couldn't hear anything. Mm. And I'm like, oh, darn, it was like a wave of like just joy that he was on stage. So I thought that was a super cool moment. And then one of my Mexico favorites is Death on the High Seas when Dave's on the piano. There's something about that haunting and dark on the beach that's just really powerful. So big, big banger of a night.
I just want to interject for a quick second. I love that in the last few months, whatever the time duration is, that The Weight has kind of become this go-to song.
Same.
When there's guests involved. If you go back to 2023, it kind of reared its head a number of times. First when Dave guested with Dead and Company, but then also DMB when they were at the Gorge to kind of wrap up the summer tour. And then, of course, during Madison Square Garden at the conclusion of the fall tour. It's such a perfect song, especially when there's multiple guests involved.
Right.
I was so happy that it came back in Mexico. And I just hope that it's something that in maybe not regular rotation, but when the moment calls for it, I just love that, you know, it, in this moment, at least, it's kind of feels like a go-to in some ways.
Yeah, I would love to ask Dave, like, did him guesting with Dead and Company inspire him to bring it to his band? You know, put that on the list, Matt, of questions we're going to ask Dave.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
That one on there. but yeah, The Weight was probably my highlight. I love Mavis Staples. She's a legend. And so anytime she steps on the stage, I was lucky enough to see her at the Gorge in 2021. She came out and did I Can't Get No Satisfaction with Dave. And that was alternate format. So it was nice to have a surprise like that during that show. So yeah, and seeing Rob up there was great. It's like, Rob just gets to come out with all the legends, you know, like Rob's just like, I'll come out. Mavis is here. I'll come out. You know, I just love that.
Well, tell everybody what you're referring to. He's only come out one more other time.
Right. He's come out in Charlottesville in 2017 when they did a charity concert with Stevie Wonder. Yeah. So this man has only come out on stage when Stevie Wonder and Mavis Staples were joining the band. So and I give him that. I give him credit for that. That is incredible.
Absolutely. Speaking of Mavis Staples, I don't know if you guys saw this, but her 85th birthday is coming up, and there is a star-studded birthday concert in April for her. It's like, it's awesome. Chris Stapleton, Grace Potter, Black Pumas, Jackson Brown, Michael McDonald, Nathaniel Rateliff, Warren Treaty, Robert Randolph, Norah Jones, Taj Mahal. Like,
where is that?
It's in LA. It's in LA. It's gonna be awesome. I mean, I think that's gonna be
I hope they televise
really
it.
Really fun thing. It'd be fun if there was a stream. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Night One was truly a great way to warm us up for the rest of the weekend. In many ways, it was my favorite show, but I mean, really, the rest of the weekend was also amazing. Saturday night, we rolled into night two, which brought us more guests and more surprises. Trisha, what was your favorite moment of night two?
It could happen.
I knew you were going to say that.
I thought it sounded awesome.
Totally, yeah.
It was great.
Definitely.
It was great.
I was excited first time, for it. Dave and Tim, and I was like, oof, if that could just have like three more verses and go a little longer.
I know. I wish Tim jammed a little bit on it. You know, I wish it did go on a little bit longer.
You know, it was a little bit of a talking to people on the ground and hearing over the couch tour. I think it was a little bit. That was actually literally what was told to me. It was night two. Definitely some big, good moments, but that was the standout for me. The 2 minute and 30 second song, It Could Happen.
That's fair. Matt, what about you?
Well, I had two sort of things that I had written down. One was the return, although I don't know how long exactly it's been away, but the What Will Become of Me After Jimmy, which is the original incarnation of PNP. Anytime that that's played, it's just like a throwback. You know, Sean and I just did on Remastered 2/17/97, and you've got Jimmy Thing into What Will Become of Me, which was a regular occurrence back then, Dave and Tim. And anytime that it gets played, I just it's such a throwback. But the other thing that I felt was, you know, I don't think electric is the right word to describe it, but just a cool moment if you're a fan of DMB, John Alasia coming out to play If I Fell with Dave. Like, I don't think that the performance was anything to write home about. I don't think it was spectacular. You know, it felt fun, but I think just as a DMB historian, as a DMB fan, you know, having a DMB podcast with you guys, like, this is just such a big moment. I'm sure it was for John. I'm sure it was for Dave. And although the performance wasn't like the most amazing, I just think that it was really an important thing for them to do together. You know, Dave said before he brought Alasia out that, you know, he's been around for such a long time. They've worked on so many things together. They've written songs together. They've, you know, if you know anything about the whole recording process with John Alasia, like, he's so important. He's always there. He's always been there throughout all the big recordings, and they've never played on a stage together. And so I just thought that was kind of cool. Wow.
It's almost hard to believe, right?
Exactly. Really, I was actually surprised when he said John. I was like, wow, this has never happened before. It was pretty incredible.
So that was my highlight. I also loved It Could Happen. For sure. I love that song. It continues to, there's some songs I think I was saying to you guys that I've totally forgotten about from Walk Around the Moon, like completely, like, have just gone out of my brain. I think that's how you can judge, like, either my brain or how good the album was, how memorable the album was. You know, there's obviously songs like Monsters and stuff that are just like going to be classics. They're going to stay that way forever. But It Could Happen has stuck around. I think it's you know, that and Looking for a Vein, I think when all is said and done, other than the big songs on Walk Around the Moon, those songs are going to be, they're going to have staying power. They're going to have longevity, because I think I really truly believe that they're some of Dave's best work, like, you know, as recently as you can say recent work. Who knows when he actually composed them, because we find out that some of these songs have sat for 10 plus years.
True.
But I think that those songs have really stuck around, and I think It Could Happen was great.
Sean?
I think night two for me, the standout things were some of the numbers behind the performances, or lack there of previous performances. So we already talked about the It Could Happen, first time played by Dave and Tim. Of course, Matt was talking about when they brought out John Alasia and covered If I Fell by the Beatles, first time that's happened. There's a fun moment Matt was talking about, Jimmy Thing, What Will Become of Me. And of course, What Will Become of Me, you really can only get in a setting like this. It just doesn't appear any other time. And then after that, we got a PNP, which is also really rare to get a PNP without a Rapunzel. It set things up for a fun night three where there was a Rapunzel without a PNP. I think a lot of those first time things, as somebody that's just super into the numbers behind DMB and Dave and Tim, that stuff really gets me excited. And then the final first time played performance of the night could very well be my favorite performance. And that is Old Man, which I, to be totally honest, it caught me off guard for a second in the fact that this has never been covered in any version of DMB, Dave and Tim, Dave Solo. There's never been a known performance prior to this. It's almost hard to believe because of the Neil Young fan that Dave is. And he talks about Neil seemingly any chance that he gets. I love the song as a standalone song. They brought out the members of the Lone Bellow to perform with Dave. I thought they provided some nice backing to the song. I don't know that it's one that sticks around. Certainly the track record says no shot, but I did think it was fun. And it's, you know, a hat tip to one of Dave's influences.
Sean, how many Neil Young songs are in the regular like rotation or like that? There's, what is there? Needle and the Damage Done. What else do we have on top of that?
Hey, hey, my, my.
Hey, hey, yeah, my, my.
Remember that when Tim kind of came back into the fold and hey, hey, my, my.
Yeah.
I loved it. It had such a small lifespan, but I loved when like a Hurricane was part of DMB performances. I just thought that kind of the sound that DMB injected into that, it was just so authentic. Down by the River's a song that has been right. Maybe not in rotation, but if you've seen the band enough, it's possible that you've seen that. I know another one that jumps out at me is Heart of Gold, which Dave did with Tim
and
Jack Johnson and Jimmy Buffett. That's been performed a couple times. I'm definitely forgetting a couple off the top of my head, but these are the ones when I think of Neil Young, DMB crossovers that really jump out at me.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, my favorite moment is going to catch you all off guard, but it was Tim's stream. Don't know why. It took me back to 1998.
Of course, yeah. Yeah.
And I was locked in. I was so locked in. I just thought he nailed it, as usual. But really just took me right back. It was really nostalgic for me to hear him play that. And it's not like it's the first time I've heard it, but for some reason,
it
was such a highlight for me that night.
I definitely had the same reaction, like, ooh, yeah, stream. Yeah, I was
with it. Hey, Sean, Sean, do you have stream stats for us?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course I do. Of course I do. You know what's interesting? I'm so glad that you mentioned stream, Jeanette, because it felt to me, if we go back in time to where we were at the conclusion of night two, I remember thinking to myself, two shows in, four Tim solo performances, and you had arguably the four most recognizable Tim songs. I thought it was really cool that you know, those first two nights played out that way. So I'm really glad that stream was your pick.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I say something quickly before we go into night three? Because there was an epic Tim performance night three. What I'm always sort of curious about is I've dabbled in listening to some of Tim's music, like the album Radiance by TR3, which came out probably like 15 years ago now, is a go-to for me. I actually really enjoy listening to it. Yeah. Tim sings on it. There's a song called See You in My Dreams, which is often was often in regular rotation being played before a DMB show. Like it would be the house music.
House music. Yeah, I was just going to say that.
And I love that song. There's a couple other songs on that album that I really enjoy. And I've always found it interesting that when Tim is given the opportunity to play, that it's always these very or in a Dave and Tim setting, he's always given the opportunity to play and there's never a time where he's like, hey, I want to play See You in My Dreams, or I want to play like just a random cover song, or I want to do like, it's always just, you know, you have a song like Stream that like he's been playing Dave and Tim forever.
Right.
And I just find that so interesting. Like he has a new album out. Like,
right.
Wouldn't he like, what's the reasoning behind him not playing a song from the new album and saying,
I sort of wish he played his new single.
Yeah. Like, hey, we've got albums for sale here. Like, thanks for your support. Yeah. Like, I'm going to play it now. You know, I just think it's so interesting. It's like, it's almost like, you know, he's pre-programmed to do this or something, you know?
Maybe the message maybe your message, Matt, got to Tim before night three, because we do get a Tim solo performance of a cover night three.
Yes.
That's
yes,
true.
Yes, we do. We do. Yeah. A highlight.
That segues us perfect into Sunday. And what do they say about Sunday? Never miss a Sunday show. However, I'm sure some people in Mexico were a little disappointed with the weather. It was pouring all day long.
Yeah.
And I believe it poured during the show as well. Yeah. But, you know, that kind of stuff ain't going to stop Dave and Tim from putting on an epic performance. So let's get into it. Sean, what was your highlight of night three?
Oh, there's a lot to talk about night three. I'm gonna pick two songs. I'm gonna cheat and I'm gonna just pick two, and I'm gonna pick two that if I had to take a guess, I'm gonna guess that nobody else was gonna pick these two. That's why I'm gonna pick them. But the first one comes really early in the set list. It ironically has a lot to do with what Jeanette was talking about with the rain, and it's Little Thing for me. Little Thing in the Rain with rain-centric lyrics. I just thought Dave really nailed this one. It is a song that for the most part just kind of pops up in Dave and Tim's settings. Of course, there was a partial performance during the night two encore in Camden last year, but that's very much the exception. It's really only in these settings that you get to hear Little Thing. So much so, prior to Mexico taking place, we've talked a couple times about quote unquote Mexico songs. And we talk about some devil songs for the most part. As songs that really don't get played anywhere else except Mexico. Well, Little Thing has been performed now 4 times in the past 7 years. All of those performances have taken place in Mexico. So when you think of Mexico, ironically, you probably should be thinking of Little Thing because it maybe doesn't come to mind instantly, but it is something that's a regular mainstay these last few years, at least. And the other one for me, and I know that I'm leaving really big, great performances on the table, but I'm going to try to share the wealth and let everybody else talk about them. The other one for me was Seek Up. I think it was, I as I was taking in the performance, I couldn't help but to think that it was about last year at this time, we were talking about the fact that Tim had begun to play some more rhythmic, almost bass-like licks during Dave and Tim shows. And it was, to me, at least, this was just such an example of that. I thought that Seek Up was an absolute highlight of the night, if not a highlight of all 3 nights for me. It just sounded so good. And if you want some crazy stats on it, it's just the third Dave and Tim performance of Seek Up in the past 21 years.
Wow. Amazing.
Wow. That's an incredible
scorching
stat.
Hot take, Sean.
Yes.
Scorching hot Oof. Take.
Burning. Trisha, what about you?
Well, Seek Up was so good. I mean, it's really hard to narrow this down. It's, I don't know if you're like me, but Sean runs DMB Society and he puts out the DMB Times after every show. And then it appears, Sean, you could barely fit everything that went on, you know, into a publication here, because even the song list alone was like, we're creeping up on 27 songs or something like that. 26, yeah. 27 songs. I mean, that's a lot of meat on the bones here, I will say. But for me, it was, I mean, of course we have to mention Solo Shotgun, but for me, it was the You Never Know. You know, it was the first time played, a little bit of an experiment, a little bit of a, you know, it wasn't totally smooth, but I would rather them play new songs they've never played than be, you know, perfect. You know, yeah, I would rather them try and play around with things like that, because I really thought it still landed. It was still incredible.
I like that take. Yeah.
You know, like it was just really, they're such professionals. Like, they're so elite that, like, you know, you mess up a lyric here too. Like, so what? They come right back to it and they land the plane. But right before that was a version of Too Much that was very cool. It was a similar version to what the Matt and Sean talked about on their podcast Remastered, because they had recently talked about a Dave and Tim show from 97 or 98. Guys?
97. Yeah, 97.
It reminded me of that cool version of Too Much. I don't remember hearing Too Much very often in Mexico. So, like, it was like these songs that you just don't, that are, I would never categorize as Mexico songs. Shotgun, You Never Know,
right.
Too Much. Night 3 just felt like you didn't know it was coming around the corner, and it was just like a surprise, 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 surprise. And I think that
is that's so Mexico. Cool. Yeah.
That's yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so. And there's so much more I could keep going, but I'll leave it open for other people.
Matt, go ahead.
Well, let me just add quickly to what Trisha said about You Never Know and what Sean touched on with Shotgun. Obviously, everybody was so excited to hear Shotgun. Shotgun. One thing that just bugs me just a little bit is these songs that are rarities, because they are rarities and because they get busted out just a small amount, sometimes they can be a little bit rough, and yeah. Like, play them more so that they are not so rough, right? Like Shotgun.
Right.
Shotgun, Dave was playing during sound check, right? He's playing it. He's sort of like in the verse, but then he forgot he was in the verse. So then he realized that he had to start singing, and it's just like if you just played it a little bit more, you know, then it would flow, you know. And then we would work our way up to like a spectacular version of Shotgun. I feel like every time Shotgun gets played now, everyone's like, it was great that they played Shotgun. It was a little rough. It was a little rough. But it's the first time it's been played in a while. And like,
but isn't
if
that
they
the
actually...
beauty of it as well? Because it's a rarity, so we don't want to hear it all that much.
Well, but is it? What's the which came first, the rarity or the terrible performance?
Exactly. Right? Like it's like I don't want it to be played every show, because then
I don't either. But I'm just saying, like I don't want it
to be turned into a Jimmy thing. You know what I mean?
I think that there's a reason that the things like that happen, and
sure,
like it would just be such a treat for it to. You know, be played
in that E1 slot.
Even like, give me right. Like, I mean, how many shows are we going to get this summer? Right, like, give me like 8 to 10 shows with Shotgun. Right,
that's too many. I was going to say 3 to 4.
I'm saying eight to ten. let's build it up so that we have one of those Shotguns. People are going to be like, oh my gosh, that DTE Shotgun was just incredible. You have to go back and listen to it. You know, I just think it's important that like. If Dave's listening right now, that he hears that, you know, like I just think that some of these songs could use a little road, you know, like these songs that DMB laid down on, you know, we just talked about Crash, right? Like we talked about Crash. How long did they play some of those songs for before they laid them down on Crash, right? Like years and years and dozens upon dozens of performances. You know, let's just do that, right? Anyways, on to my take. I can't not mention Dodo, because that was
sure.
I know the highlight, I think, for everybody was Dodo.
Yeah.
We talked about potentially getting a mini Dave and Friends reunion, which we sort of did, although, you know, it wasn't anything that was different from previous Mexico years when Trey has joined, except that Trey played electric this time, which was awesome. I thought the sound there was great. Trey singing backup vocals, the You Did part. Was just really cool.
As we all once were.
closest that we've got to Dave and Friends, and then they roll it into Cripple Creek, and and that was just really cool. You know, that's as close to Dave and Friends as we've seen in a long, long time. I'm actually, you know, some year it would be really interesting if it was like if Mexico turned into, you know, let's say Fish is not doing their thing, and Dave and Tim, you know, it turns into like a Dave and Friends thing, because I think that would just be really interesting to me. But that was, I think my overall highlight. You know, I did think that the rest of the show flowed pretty well. I thought it flowed like a Night Three, as Trisha said earlier. You know, things that you don't necessarily know that you want to hear, but end up hearing, and that's really cool. Always love to hear Why I Am, Dave and Tim.
Oh, that was cool.
They brought the video screens for it as well, which is always like, you know, it's one of my favorite songs just because of the video in the background. So those are my highlights. And we can move on to Jeanette.
I mean, you guys really, really covered all of it. I mean, my highlight really was the fact that Trey was there and did So Damn Lucky, Dodo, and Up on Cripple Creek. Also, All You Wanted Was Tomorrow was played for the first time, Dave and Tim. Is that right, Sean?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, so you guys really nailed Night Three for me. Anybody else have anything on Night Three?
Well, I think a couple little tidbits about Night Three. So Matt was talking about Dodo. Of course, that's going to be the standout for probably most people because of how rare it is for performances.
And also it was good, right?
Oh, it was so good. Sorry. And part of
it was amazing.
Part of what makes it stand out is how good that it was. There's been a handful of Dodos here and there since Mexico became a thing. It's still an extremely rare song, but a Dodo with Trey Anastasia is like next level rare. You've got to go all the way back to 2006 for the last time that has happened. So it's super cool to hear Dodo, but to get Dodo with Trey, somebody who plays such a prominent role on that album, it's just really a special thing. I want to rewind just a little bit to two things really quickly, because Matt touched on one of them prior to us jumping into Night Three, and that was the second Tim performance of the night, which was In Your Eyes, the Peter Gabriel song. I thought was so notable because, first of all, it sort of caught me off guard. And then it seemed like the same thing was happening with the audience. Little by little, the audience was starting to pick up what it was, to the point where they were starting to, at least the parts of the songs that they knew, they're singing as Tim's playing. Created this really cool moment, so much so that when Dave came back out, Dave mentioned something to the effect of,
"I'm still getting myself back from In Your Eyes when you played the drums." Got me higher than I wanted to be. And y'all were singing. I was back there like, beautiful.
So I thought that was really cool. And then the other thing I wanted to mention was the scene when Trey took the stage. We talked about this during the fall tour, and there was a moment at Madison Square Garden where Trombone Shorty just kind of runs out onto the stage. This was the opposite of that, but also kind of similar, because Trey wasn't actually introduced. He just sort of strolls out onto the stage, but strolls out onto the stage empty-handed. And I was like, what in the heck is going on? And then he sits down on the piano and plays So Damn Lucky. I mean, it was just a crazy couple of minutes when all of this stuff was happening. So to end the main set, we have Trey on the piano for So Damn Lucky. Then Trey picks up a guitar and we have Dodo, and just a really fun version of Up on Cripple Creek. So the way that show ended, it was so much fun. Yeah, it was just a really great final run to wrap up the weekend.
Absolutely. And this is why you pay the money and you go to Mexico.
Yeah. Dave must have been feeling it too, because Some Devil actually was not on the set the written set.
Double encore.
Back out.
Double encore, yeah. Double encore
for that. So that's always a fun surprise too.
Always, yeah.
The last thing, I've just had so much to say about the show. I thought it was so fitting mm-hmm. that the show in some ways ended the way that it started, because the start of this show had three consecutive Dave solo performances, Pretty Bird, Shotgun, Just Breathe. And then for that second encore that nobody was expecting, including Dave and Tim, when they wrote the set at the start of the night, Dave concludes it by himself, another Dave solo performance. Yeah. Cool stuff.
Yeah, that's a great point. But yeah, it really makes me wonder why I was in New Jersey and not in Mexico this weekend. But
mistakes were made.
Yep, mistakes were made as usual. but there is so much more in store for DMB in the near future. We're really ramping up on 2024 now, guys. Like we're moving into it. Here we go. Yep. Things are cooking. It'll all be here before we know it. So let's chat about it. And where are you going? Okay, well, I don't think any of us are going, but you never know. You never know. Where the band will be next, where they are going, is Vegas. And on March 1st, they will be playing a show at the Dolby Live Theater at Park MGM. This first time playing at that venue. I'm eager to see what happens in Vegas, because just like Mexico, sometimes what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. So I'm eager for those shows. Then it'll be followed by them playing the Extra Innings Festival next night, March 2nd in Tempe, Arizona. Big, big weekend for the band. I'm excited to follow along. Does anyone have any predictions or wishes they want to hear that weekend? Real quick, go around the room. Matt.
Well, I think last time they played Vegas, which was the one-off. Trisha, I think you were there back in 2020. Yeah. Jeanette, you were there also. There were some pretty rare jams that popped out, like Beach Ball, I think.
Yeah, and I felt like Dave had a hat with all the songs in it, and he was just pulling. It was so random, but loved every second of it. Yeah.
Yeah, what was that one song? Without Love. You remember that song that he played it?
Come Again?
Long Train Run. Long Train Run.
Of course, it's Long Train
Run.
Yes.
Thank you.
Like, where'd that come from? Sorry, that was fun.
They did tell me something good that night, too.
Yeah.
That's right. So I'm like, you know, I know Vegas is a one-off show. It's going to be super special and cool.
Sure.
Smaller audience likely. And there's just a different vibe in Vegas. They bring the party. People are bringing the party. They're up all night. I mean, it's just Vegas was super fun in 2020. And I already regret not going, to be honest.
It didn't even happen yet, but we regret not going.
But I would like some songs to come back that maybe will come back in get road tested and played in Europe again, and then for summer, like a break
Kit-Kat
for
jam?
It. Kit Kat Jam.
Sure.
Sorry, did someone say something?
Sean, you have any wishes?
Well, I mean, if I could easily pull wishes from that Las Vegas show, because there were some really fun songs that kind of reared their head that night for the first time in a while. I love Beach Ball, so you know, why not make Vegas a Beach Ball thing? You know, I would love that. Right. Sweet Up and Down was in the encore that night. And it's been a minute since we heard Sweet Up and Down. And Sweet Up and Down is kind of one of those songs that, like, I'm always interested in hearing the way that that song maybe grows as the band changes. So, yeah, I'm going to take the easy way out. And I'm going to just pull a couple of great songs that were played in Vegas last time. And why not run them back again?
Yeah, sure. Trish can probably attest to this as well. I think being there, you know, we didn't know it was coming, right? This was March 1st, 2020, right? So, like, we're like minutes away from the pandemic happening, and we don't know yet. And we're hearing songs like Beach Ball and Sweet Up and Down and just, you know, all this randomness. And I'm thinking this is the beginning of 2020. Like, this is what we have in store this year, you know? What a disappointment, right? So... Right. For me, I hope that they do whip some stuff out and it's kind of like the preview for 2024. You know, this is the first show of the full band. This is their first show of the year. Let's get it going. Let's set a precedent for 2024, you know?
And a lot of people, when this show was announced, a lot of people were quick to point out how tiny this venue is. I think it's like a 63 or 6,400 person capacity venue. Apparently a really great sounding room. So we'll see if any of that plays into what the band ends up performing. But this show, if you were lucky enough to grab tickets to this show, you could be in for a real treat with this little one-off Vegas show.
I'm literally looking for tickets as we speak. this is quite a pricey ticket. I'm looking at the balcony 400, you know, last row for $600. So, oh boy.
Well, yeah, these will be the first full band shows this year. And then not too long after that, they'll be heading across the pond to Europe 2024. We will be diving into that tour in the coming episodes. So please, please stay tuned for that. We have a lot in store for you on Europe. And I don't want to give anything away, but there might be some Pod That Jane Likes boots on the ground. So get excited for some firsthand content. And yeah, it's been swell. Before we sign off, I do want to say, please remember that if you are enjoying the Pod That Jane Likes, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platforms. Also, be sure to follow us on social media. Simply search for the Pod That Jane Likes on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. Does anybody have any final thoughts?
Same, we want to go to Vegas?
Yep, I do.
It's fun to have shows to chat about again. It's not been that long because, you know, we had the fall tour, but you know, we had a little bit of a break. It's nice to have things to recap.
Absolutely. And so for Matt, Trisha, Sean, and Jeanette, we're the Pod That Jane Likes, and we'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Adios.
Bye.